Well, good morning, everyone. And this is such a gift because I love Deborah. I also love the fact that Deborah means honeybee. And sometimes when I think about all of us with the Spirit of God dwelling within us, we're like honeybees going around to every different thing and nourishing and getting nectar and sharing His word. So I'm taking a page from Melissa's book because I thought I'd set up a little bit of the context of the time in which Deborah was the fourth judge in the book of Judges. So she was an extraordinary woman in both the Hebrew Bible and the Christian Old Testament. On the timeline, Deborah lived in the 300-year period of Judges, about 200 years after the time of Moses and Joshua. And the book of Judges itself, which is 12 books, covers the period between the book of Joshua, the conquest, and the establishment of the kingdoms, as described in the book of Samuel, where in that period is the period in which biblical judges served as charismatic leaders with supernatural wisdom or strength by the Holy Spirit to be Israel's saviors. In our study, prior to talking about actually Deborah in the fourth book of Judges, Judges 2 just reveals something that will continually play out in Deborah. It reveals the repetitive cycle throughout the book on the Israelites' sin, suffering, supplication, and salvation, and how God never forsook them, nor did He break the covenant He made with them in Exodus, although they broke it many times. So after Moses delivered the 5 million Israelites out of Egypt and established them as a nation to enter Canaan, he selected Joshua to lead God's people in the conquest of Canaan. But the Israelites did not finish the job of taking the land from the Canaanites as he commanded. They intermingled. They lived among the Canaanites. They worshiped idols, other gods. And remember, what did God say? I am the one and only God. And he'd strictly forbidden them from worshiping these gods. And they involved, you know, religious prostitution and child sacrifice. So at Bochim, the angel of the Lord came to Israel and told Israel that God would no longer give them the power to drive out these people, saying, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land I swore to give your ancestors. I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall not make a covenant with the people of this land, but you shall break down their altars. Yet you disobeyed me. Why have you done this? And I also said, I will not drive them out before you. They will become traps for you, and their gods will become snares for you. That's Judges 2, 1 and 3. So of course the Israelites wept, and they called the place Bochim, and they offered sacrifices to the Lord. So Joshua and the ancestors died, and a new generation grew up that neither knew the Lord nor what He had done for Israel. And of course, what happened? The Lord allowed foreign enemies to invade them, occupy their land, hand them over to raiders. And whenever they went to fight, unlike previously, the Lord's hand was not upon them. They were defeated and in great distress. And they lived in barbaric times, terrible oppression. And at that point, the Lord said, and this is Judges 2:16, then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders and restored peace in their land. Now, the Israelites did not listen to judges all the time. So every time there was a judge, they would be delivered from their enemies as long as he lived. And then, you know, the Lord would relent and heard their groaning. But when the judge died, The Israelites became corrupt again, refusing to give up their evil practices. So he was very angry, the Lord, with them. And it's interesting because what he said is, I will use them to test Israel and see whether they will keep the way of the Lord and walk in it as their ancestors did. So the Lord had not allowed Joshua to drive out everyone from the land of Cana. Why? Because he was testing them and their faithfulness to him. Enter Deborah, the fourth judge of all the judges. Deborah, as I said, meant honeybee, was a prophetess, a judge, and she was leading Israel during the time of King Jabin of Cana. He had been oppressing the Israelites for 20 years, and he had a very cruel commander named Sisera. And Deborah is included among the seven prophets of Israel, including Sarah, Miriam, Hannah, Abigail, Huldah, and Esther. And in the archives of the Jewish woman's archives, because she is a Jewish prophetess, it describes Deborah in a deeper way as a teacher of the Torah, a worker of the temple. She obviously had wisdom and spirit of design inspiration. She was actually described as sharing the same prophetic ability as Samuel, because like him, she was at Ramah, which describes the height of spiritual qualities. She was the wife of Lapido. Lapid means torch. His other name was Barak, which means lightning. And what was interesting is Deborah prepared the wicks, very thick wicks, that she sent to the tabernacle at Shiloh, which illuminated and created much light. And she encouraged her husband to help her with that. She also encouraged fellow Israelites to regularly attend synagogue and tabernacle. And she basically showed God's love for his people. God used Deborah to speak to Israel. She was loved and respected by both men and women for her wise counsel and mediation dispensed under a tree known as the Palm of Deborah. So, what role did Deborah play in the lives of the Israelites beyond being totally committed to the Lord, loving the Lord, caring for the Lord's people, and showing his love to them? When the Israelites were doing evil in God's eyes, and King Jabin was oppressing them with Sisera, Deborah had been all along yearning for Israel's freedom. The Lord spoke to Deborah that he had heard the people's cries and was going to free them. The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go take with you. She says to Barak, the Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go take with you 10,000 men from Naphtali and Zebulun and lead them up to Mount Tabor. I will lead Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands. That's Judges 4:6. So here's Deborah. What is she doing? She's listening to the Lord. She's hearing the Lord. And she's obeying the Lord's command. She's commanding Barak to do this. And the message from God informed Barak that God, would have sovereign control over the battle. I will lure Sisera and give him into your hands. This entire situation was a new species of war. The woman gave the orders. It was directed by prophecy. The Israelites had no arms and were going to fight a well-armed one. They had like 900 chariots. They were built out of iron. They could move quickly. Here are the Israelites with no arms. But God put in the heart of the 10,000 men to have faith without arms to overcome the greater well-armed company. So what does Barak do? Well, he agrees to Deborah's command, which is really a command from God, but he will only go and take his men up to Mount Tabor if she goes with him. And, you know, God promised Barak he'd be victorious. This was an unfitting response to God's command. And maybe it was some sort of, maybe Barak wanted to be assured that the divine presence in a battle represented by Deborah would be there. But I will also point out to you in Hebrews 11:32, Barak is named one of the heroes of faith. So we don't know what's going on there, but maybe he wanted that extra assurance. So Deborah went with Barak. She would not send him where she would not go herself. Those who in God's name call others to their duty should be ready to assist them. So as we see in Acts 20:35, I did everything. I showed you that by this kind of hard work, we must help the weak, remembering the words to the Lord Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So she wasn't going to ask him to do something that she wouldn't do herself. She was assisting him. But she tells him, your conditional response to a divine command is the basis for withholding the honor of the victory over Sisera from Barak. For the Lord will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman. Judge 4:9. So of course Barak thinks, okay, Deborah's gonna do this. He didn't know. In the middle of this, we have Heber the Kenite. Heber, who left his clan, pitched his tent near Kadesh, and he sort of had made peace with King Jabin. He told Sisera that Barak's troops were moving up to Mount Tabor. So Sisera assembled his 900 iron chariots and warriors near the Kishon River. Deborah, at this point, commands to Barak, go. This day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone before you? So Deborah is fully trusting in the Lord and encouraging Barak to do the same. So in Judges 4, we see he led the man down Mount Tabor against Sisera. Now I want you to know, Mount Tabor is this conical structure. They're up there, they can see. But what's down below? Plains. So these guys have no arms. They are coming down to meet chariots that can whip around on plains. I mean, this is a faith-filled group if I ever saw one. As promised by Deborah, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and army. God used both human, sword, and divine to accomplish this. The heavens broke, there were storms, and the Kishon, the dry Kishon River Valley, became a massive flood, both sweeping chariots away and miring them in mud. Barak's forces pursued all the Canaanites until none were left. Sisera abandoned his chariot and headed towards the tents of Heber because he knew he had a good relationship with King Jabin. Jael, the wife of Heber, offered, of course, near Eastern hospitality. She covered him with a rug and gave him a drink of milk and stood at the door to divert intruders while he slept. Now, let me make a point here. Women and men in those days had separate tents. So Sisera thought, I'm going into a woman's tent because no one is ever going to look for me there. When Sisera was asleep, however, Jael took a peg from a tent and a hammer and drove it through his temple into the ground. And you should know that Bedouin women had the task of pitching tents. So she was an expert at this. She took her everyday knowledge and used it to glorify God and kill the evil one. Then she showed Barak the corpse. And, you know, I want to say this. There's a little bit, a little commentary on Jael here for a sec. Let me just digress and find that page. Jael had been inspired partly by observing what had happened. The heavens and the elements had completely conspired against this army, against one devoted to destruction. And so God had put providence into her hand. And the secret instinct of God incited her, ensuring success. So she showed Barak the dead corpse. And thus Deborah's prophecy was fulfilled. Two women received honor for the defeat of Sisera. Deborah started it, Jael finished it. At that moment, Deborah and Barak said a Hallel prayer after seeing the miracles of the Lord performed for them. In Psalm 115, there's a set of psalms from 113 to 118, and they are said at various points in time, a celebration, thanksgiving. Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name bring glory for the sake of your love and your faithfulness. So the defeat of Jabin's army initiated a period of constant decline in Galilee until no longer a threat to Israel. And Deborah's dream of restored freedom and peace came. There were 40 years rest of oppression. Now, at the end of this entire scene, Deborah writes an ancient poem. It's a hymn of victory. It's one of the great songs of the Bible with a theme of blessing and curse throughout. And, you know, she wasn't going to sing until after the victory. Just a second here. Okay, sorry. I got this. So I just want to review a little bit of what this components of this song are. The first and foremost is praise the Lord for victory. The rise of volunteer spirit in Israel among both princes and people. And that praise includes God's prior deeds, you know, saving the one from Sinai, Edom, Seir, they all describe it. Deborah describes the situation of distress by northern tribes. What is the distress? It was rooted in idolatry. They chose new gods. Then she prays God for the faithful leaders and volunteers who responded in crisis. The righteous acts of God were those by which he intervened to bring salvation and victory to his people. Blessings were pronounced. Excuse me, let me get my little chart. This is not a blow-up chart like Melissa, but I'll pass it around. Blessings were announced on the tribes who responded. Ephraim, which is where we think Deborah was from, Benjamin, Makar, Zebulun, Issachar, Naphtali, which is where Barak or Lapido came from. And then taunts and curses to Meroz, Reuben, Gad, Dan, and Asher. Why? Because they didn't participate. So you can just, the X's are where they didn't participate. It also discusses the kings of Cana, where the battle took near Tanakh, near Megiddo. And from the heavens, the stars fought against Sisera. That's in Judges 5. It affirms the divine intervention because God's intervention took the form of a huge storm that turned Kishon River into the raging torrent. They, you know, and this song, by the way, in many of these songs, there's blessings and curses. So they cursed Mazoz for failing to aid in the battle. They blessed Jael for slaying you know, Sisera, her faithfulness to the covenant of people of Israel, which she had through her clan to Moses. And then, of course, at the end of it, almost the end, there was the pathos of Sisera's mom. Why is his chariot not coming? And it was almost a mocking thing, because he usually takes, maybe he's delayed because of the plunders or something. But the very end, the hymn, Victory Over Idolatrous Enemies, concludes with a curse on evil enemies and a blessing on the faithful. So may all your enemies perish, Lord, but may all who love you be like the sun when it rises in strength. Which means a life full of blessings, rises in strength. Sun like rises in strength. So, what can we learn from the story of Deborah? Well, I think really it's about God can use the courage of ordinary people in the face of adversity to deliver his people. It teaches us, regardless of our position, gender, status, we, each one of us, can be instruments of divine intervention when we have faith and obey God's will. You know, it's interesting that God chose Deborah. I mean, he's got a great sense of humor. I gotta say this. By selecting a woman, not only as his judge, but as his mouthpiece, he was showing again that he loves to use things the world perceives as weak as his means for shaming the strong. So actually, of all the judges, you know, Gideon, Jephthah, Samuel, Deborah was the most qualified, especially from a moral point of view. Why? Because she never fails in her commitment to God and his command. So what is this telling us? When we are connected to God on a daily basis, and we are, why? We are because he loves us. We're made out of love. In love, he predestined us to be adopted, Ephesians. We are wonderfully made. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. We're made in his image in Genesis, created mankind in his own image, in the image of God, male and female, he created them and blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. And, you know, we'd see in Timothy, the goal of his command is love, which comes from a pure heart, good conscience, and sincere faith. So in many ways, in all the ways Deborah served the Israelites, she displayed self-giving love, the love that Christ shows for us. She was giving herself completely to being a mother to her people. And I find that interesting because it was a form of leadership that nourished Israel. She doesn't, even though she goes to battle, she doesn't adopt a man's hardness or masculinity. She realizes that her womanhood is actually a strength to be leveraged in leadership, not weakness to be discarded. And so I think we all know that like Deborah, we have the world around us and we have the spiritual battle. And, you know, in that battle, we are called to look at everyone with love and to serve each other, be patient, be self-giving, strong, courageous, obey. And really surrender, you know, to his standards of greatness. I will proclaim the name of the Lord. Oh, praise the greatness of our God. He is our right rock. His works are perfect. All his ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is he. That's from Deuteronomy. And, you know, I keep thinking, we live our daily lives and we face a lot of challenges. But I also know in those challenges, Deborah was living in a time of great oppression, robberies. You couldn't even go outside the city gates. And I think in those times, what was she doing? Praising God, encouraging others to come to God, and really encouraging actions that she heard from God in other people. And I just want to end with a little story, a little personal story. As you all know, on day one, I adopted my beautiful daughter, Sarah. She is Latina, born in America. And I used to say to the Lord, I need your little instruction book. And literally from day one, as long as I was connected to him, I had no idea what this adventure was going to be like, what I would need to do. There were times when she was a teen and she said, you're not my mother. I don't want anything to do with you. I mean, her birth mother showed up. Lots of different things happened. These were incredibly challenging times. And I just really, literally have a vision of me clinging to Christ on the cross and asking him every day to carry me, asking him every day to instruct me. And I can say now, I used to say to her, you know, I only want you to be the best you can be in God's eyes, not my eyes, God's eyes. And you're here for a unique purpose. And I can say now, she's in her third year of law school, and I think she's fulfilling that purpose of helping others. And it took me a lot of being totally faithful, total surrender, obeying the Lord, trusting in the Lord, and encouraging her with patience, and at times having to be very strong when, you know, the birth mother came in, and I really had to be careful how I walk that journey, because it was her birth mother. So I have to say that I connect with Deborah because she showed me in this lesson all the things that you need to do. And one final thing I would like to say about the whole lesson of Judges. The whole cycle of the sin, you know, the whole cycle of sin, supplication, you know, salvation, that whole cycle. You know, we go through it ourselves. It's our daily life. Do we halfway repent like the Israelites when they just moaned and groaned and wept? Or do we kill the sin like Jael did with Sisera? Because only then can we have that real purity of love, relationship with God and with others. So it's just a thought. And finally, as a little treat, I have here a very hip musical version of the Song of Deborah. I have the words here, but I'm not going to give them to you. However, I sort of summarized. So excuse me, it is only 5 minutes. It's hip. It's kind of interesting, but listen carefully to the words, if I can get this sound up. Hang on. Oh, maybe I'm not connected. Should I disconnect this?
You're so high, oh, here's where I am. Offer up your soul. mountains
my mood.
Before the God of Israel. In the time of Shamgar, son of Anath, and in the time of Jael, people were afraid to travel. Warriors became fat and sloppy, no fight left in them. Then I, Deborah, rose up a mother in Israel, and not a shield or spear could be seen among the 40 companies of Israel.
Whoops.
You who are wealthy, you who are poor, pay attention. Gather at the town well and listen to them sing, chanting the tale of God's victories in Israel, of how the people prepared for battle. Some of the brothers were with me and some of the brothers weren't. What's up with that? Ephraim came from the valley. Benjamin brought more troops. Zebulun and Naphtali defied death, and Issachar's princes rallied to me. But Reuben couldn't make up his mind. Gilead played safe across the Jordan while Dan went sailing, and Asher kept his distance on the coast. Kings of Canaan came. They fought at Taanach, at Megiddo's brook. They took no silver, no plunder. The stars joined the fight. From the sky, the stars fought Sisera. The river Kishon swept them away. That old man, Kishon. Stallions pounded, stallions charged, stallions stampeded, and God's angel cursed those who did not rally with the valiant.
Lift your hearts up high, lift your hearts up, oh Israel, Israel. Offer up yourselves, offer up yourselves. Let's fight and bless, fight and bless God. Fight and bless God. Oh, make music to the God of Israel.
Most blessed of all women is Jael, wife of Heber the Kenite. Sisera asked for water. She brought milk. In a handsome bowl, she offered cream. She grabbed a tent peg in her left hand. Her right hand seized a hammer. She hammered Sisera, smashed his head, drove a hole through his head. He slumped at her feet. He fell. He sprawled. He slumped at her feet. He fell. Slumped, fallen, dead.
Come on, yeah. Lift your hearts up high, lift your hearts up high, Israel, Israel. Offer up yourselves,
offer up yourselves.
Let's fight and bless God. Fight and bless God. Fight and bless God. Make music. Make music to the God of Israel.
Sisera's mother waited at the window. What delays his chariot's rumble? Her wisest servant answers with calm. They are robbing the people they defeated. A girl, maybe two, for each man, and for Sisera, a bright silk shirt and colorful scarves for the next
victim.
Okay. It beats me reading it. Anyway, that's it, ladies.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Pink and blue.
Happy birthday, dear Ginger.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
It's Ginger's birthday, and it's a significant one, and so we're very blessed.